This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
You know, this is a big deal for someone to like sing your song. I mean, you know, I wrote that for Rihanna and then she wanted it and then she didn't want it. And then she went back to it again and then didn't want it again. And then it went to Rita Ora. You know how many songs that they can choose from? Like anybody, you know, so it's a big honor.
I'm Justin Jay. As a photographer, I've gotten to shoot rock stars, hip hop moguls, world-class athletes, and some other truly extraordinary subjects. I'm fascinated by the backstories and life experiences that help shape these compelling people. The right photograph can reveal quite a lot about someone, but some stories can't be told with just a picture. Sometimes you need to sit down, listen, and dig a little deeper. This is The Plug. Yeah, but what I really want to do is direct. We've heard this cliche from countless actors when asked about their future creative aspirations. But the fact of the matter is, we live in a world of artistic specialization. Screenwriters, stylists, choreographers, producers, and songwriters, they each have their own individual lanes. Many talented performers are simply vessels for other people's material. Actors recite other people's words, and chances are the artist singing that infectiously catchy pop song you just heard is performing music that someone else wrote for them. But every once in a while, an artist comes along that is both a gifted performer and an accomplished songwriter. Our guest today is a singer who has over 2 billion streams to their name. But in addition to writing and performing her own material, she's also written a string of hit songs for some of the biggest artists on the planet, including Rihanna, Celine Dion, Rita Ora, and Cher. So how do you decide which material to keep for yourself and which songs to offer to another artist? And how does it feel when words that you scribbled on a notebook in your room become an international hit song performed by someone else? We'll find out as we sit down for a conversation with this multi-talented songwriter and artist. Today, singer, songwriter, and the voice that Spin magazine described as a glorious warble that spans 5 octaves, LP.
LP, thank you for joining us. I'm glad we can make this happen.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited. I'm very excited.
Wow, first off, congrats on the release of Churches. That must be really exciting.
Thank you. It is very. I mean, you know, it's like any record, any day above ground is great, and any record release is even greater. I mean, it's just so nice.
Let's get the plug in right away, just so listeners know we're talking about LP Church's brand new album, just dropped, available on all streaming platforms. Did you release any vinyl for this album?
Yes. Yeah, that's. I think you could pre-order at this point. It should be. Should be out any second. Hey, Ruby, is vinyl out? December 15th.
December 15th for the vinyl. Well, the reason I ask is just I'm curious how important it is for you to have the album experience in its entirety. I know different artists have different views on that.
I dig it. I mean, I just, you know, in between interviews today, I ran down to my local spot, Cosmic Vinyl, and just bought like, you know, $300 worth of vinyl just now. You know, it's like, I'm late to the game with vinyl. I just enjoy it. I enjoy the ceremony of it. I enjoy
the physicality of it.
Yeah. It's like, there's something cool about it, you know? And it just, it's so nice to hold and to it's art, man, you know, it's art.
It's true. And even from, you know, from a photographer's perspective, you have a square foot of artwork, you know, and albums used to be, schedules used to get pushed back because of getting the artwork just right. And now it's almost just like a kind of a footnote or a thumbnail, you know?
Yeah. And I think that people, you know, I think a lot of people, and that's so cool. I mean, I don't know when it started again, but that whole like people enjoying like buying a record at a show, like, you know, like that's like that's the cool thing. Like if you really dig a band or a singer or like a songwriter, whatever, when you go to their show, grabbing an album is like just something you might do. Like, you know, you want to put that person's album on your shit, like in your house. Like it's just artwork and it's dope.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, I think I would, and you can speak to this better, but it also probably has the unintended consequence of, from a fan's perspective, you have this amazing physical item that you can cherish and experience. But, you know, economically, it's probably much more valuable to have a fan buy your vinyl at a show than to, you know, stream it perpetually on Spotify, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So it's good for both of you guys.
You know, and that's why it's good to like, you know, it's good to have to strike a pose on that cover, you know? So it's like something that someone wants to like hang up or whatever.
It's also cool too, because, you know, a lot of artists, they put a lot of effort into the sequencing and they're very precious about how people experience that. And, you know, I'm curious, and the album is great for that because you can't really, there's no cheat code, you know,
like you can't mess with it. You can forget to put on the second side, which, you know, is like, or the, I think I got two discs.
It's a double.
On this one. Yeah. I think it has to be just cause like, I mean, it's only 52 minutes of music, or maybe it's two sides. I don't freaking know. I have no idea. Don't ask me. I have no idea.
And you know, that's really important to some artists, the sequence and the way that artists experience their music.
Well, you know, Adele, she disabled the shuffle button and
that's just what I was getting to.
And I would say that's severe, but not for Adele, because you know, you figure she's got like, what, like 65 million, you know, monthly listeners. I bet of those, probably half are like would have never hit shuffle anyway, or would have never skipped a second, but maybe the other half might be the, you know. And so, you know, I mean, I encourage everybody to listen to my record once through, you know, like just give it a shot, you know, once through, because I feel like we did go through some effort with the order. And, you know, this is the first album I ever bookended an intro outro kind of thing. So I want them to experience that. And I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, those little creative decisions are what make it unique.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you know, with that in mind, I'm curious, you know, if you were to take a spectrum of, let's say you have a hip hop album that has 25 different producers on it, and it really ultimately just more feels like a collection of potential hit individual tracks.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of the spectrum, you have, let's say, a Radiohead LP, which some people might say is a concept album.
Yeah.
Where do you see Churches on that spectrum?
Oh, God. Well, I would say, dead in the middle, man, at the top of that bell curve, you know?
Yeah.
Just because I feel like it's, you know, it's definitely, I feel like almost I'm like wrapped in my own world. So I'm not, you know, but I do think I try to write every song as if it's a single. I feel like this record is not like, it's not like a couple of singles and a bunch of album tracks, but it feels, each song feels like it could be a single if it wanted to, you know? I feel like they are standalone.
Which is fun, but it still has a flow to it from start to finish.
Yeah. Yes. But having said that, even like, I don't even know, you know, I let other people handle that whole singles thing, you know? Cause like, I mean, I don't know. And you know, I mean, I just don't know what a single is, you know? I really, I do and I don't, but I let the territories that, like, you know, we have I'm on my label that's like run by my managers, actually their new label for their management company, and now it's its own label. So for this record, I've signed to them because, to be honest with you, they've been like running the show anyway, but since Lost on You, like with like really all the partners and everything, so now we license to all the partners from our own, this label, you know, and I trust them implicitly. I've been with my managers for like 10, 11 years. And so, you know, I just kind of go with those partners and what they think is a single, what they think works in their country. And, you know, and sometimes I'm like, you were wrong. Nice going, you know, way to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, I just try to write every song so that it stands alone. But I also think that, you know, Mike Del Rio, my producer, and even executive producer in a way, you know, I'm the executive producer, but I think Mike expanded his sonic palette on this record, you know. We really kind of didn't like adhere to any, we never do adhere to any genre, but particularly kind of on this record. I don't know. I wrote this song, this record as a songwriter, you know. It's like, you know, we all, like all the people I collaborate with, including myself, we all write for other people too. So I was just looking for songs, but I mean, you know, they're my concepts and my lyrics and my, you know, melodies, like, you know, like more on the whole than I do with, for when I'm writing for others. Yeah.
I have a question about that. You know, so you've written for so many amazing other artists as well. And I'm curious, do you have, what's your process for that? Do you have a pool of material that at some point you decide where that's going to end up, whether it's for yourself or for another artist? Or, you know, if you're writing a song for, whether it's Rita Ora or Cher or whoever, yep, were those songs written from scratch for them?
Sometimes, not always, you know. I mean, I wrote like the song that I had with Rita Ora, which I can't not even remember the name of it. That was actually, sorry.
So many hits. You just can't even,
you know, but Rihanna was actually like, I wrote that for Rihanna, and then she wanted it, and then she didn't want it, and then she went back to it again, and then didn't want it again, and then it went to Rita Ora. So, and yeah, I was writing that for her, you know. And then like the song that Celine Dion just put on her most recent album, Courage, it's called Change My Mind. That was like a song that was like intended for me, you know. That was in like on hold for me. I kind of I wasn't going to use it at this for this record anyway. But yeah, so
I mean, how do you decide something like that? I mean, you obviously put passion.
I didn't decide. My fucking publisher just sent it to her. Like, here you go. It's like, you're not going to ask me about, you know. I didn't want it anyway. It's cool.
That's funny. And then, so I'm curious, what part of being a recording artist do you enjoy the most? Do you enjoy the experience of being in the studio and creating and that whole process? Or do you really relish in getting to be in front of people and play and have people experience your work?
I love both. Like if I didn't have both, I'd be lost. You know what I mean? Cause like after a while, I need a break from touring sometimes just like to like kind of go like, who am I? You know what I mean? Especially like as things have gotten bigger, like sometimes, you know, I get a little bit like after like the, you know, 5,000 people, I can't even comprehend any more than that, you know. But but even, you know, even lesser than that, I'm still like kind of, it would get rote, yeah, is what I'm saying, you know. And and also, you know, I wouldn't have anything to sing if I didn't go in the studio. And that's not only why I do it. I mean, I love creating. I love, like, you know, every time right now, I mean, I'm already on to the next record, you know, and thinking about what deluxe record would be. And, you know, I have so many songs and, you know, and I'm like wanting to get back in the studio and things.
I mean, 'cause it seems like there was a time when artists, if they really wanted to, they could almost choose to withdraw from the public's eye and just become like a studio artist, you know, whether it's the Beatles or Steely Dan or, you know, countless artists.
Yeah.
It seems like because the economics of the music industry now, I mean, I guess you have licensing and you have merch and you write for other people, but for the majority of artists, like it seems like that's not really an option. Yeah. Like touring is really the only way to be like a surviving artist.
Oh my God. Yeah. No matter what it is, you know, and that's why when we didn't have it, it was just like, and when nobody had it, like, you know, like that was the weirdest thing for me. 'Cause I always felt like, you know, like, you know, I'm no stranger to waiting. Trust me. That's the second best thing I'm good at, or third best, you know, it's like singing, songwriting and waiting. It's like been a lot of that in my career, you know? So this time it was only different because normally when I'm waiting, I feel like everyone's like, you know, running ahead of me, you know? And I'm like just sitting there waiting to like, be let out of the gate.
Yeah.
But this was like, you know, we were all just sitting there like basically aghast at the situation. I think, you know, it was like,
yeah,
what, you know? So it is definitely, both of those things. Like I love, you know, I love when I'm, kind of getting ready to like build the next chapter. It's cool.
I mean, it seems like, you know, COVID and the shutdown was just so devastating to so many people for so many reasons, but it seemed like it must have hit particularly hard for people who make a living or whose passion is performing. I mean, you know, you need an audience in order for that to happen. You're fortunate because you're also a gifted writer as well. Did that give you a little insulation from, you know, depression, or were you really prolific during 2020, or was it just kind of debilitating?
I did a lot of stuff during 2020. You know, I mean, that was a cool thing. I had this record to work on. So that was dope. And, you know, if I had just put out a record, then I would have put out another one. I'm glad that I didn't. I feel bad for the people that put out a record like right before this happened, you know, and because that seems really on hold, because I'm sure they were like, well, I have to write another record. There's not like, I can't not write another, I gotta, you know, but I didn't, I never got to like performance blue balls or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry to be so crass, but.
Hey, this is a podcast. Like. You could say whatever you want.
This is a fucking podcast. Say what you want. But yeah, I think that must suck, you know? So I felt like I at least, had, you know, this thing partly in the can, and then I was able to like work on it and refine and also just, you know, put this obviously epic time period in there too. You know?
It must be such a strange experience for a band. Like you talked about, like, I know the Strokes dropped their album just a few weeks before the shutdown.
Yep.
And, you know, just touring an album that's like almost 2 years old.
Yeah. I remember like hitting like Julian Casablancas, like texting him, like we just started like, you know, talking, and I opened up for him at this festival, and we were talking about like doing something together at some point. But I remember like texting him doing a puzzle to his record. Like, what am I doing? Like, and I was just like, love your new record, man.
What a Cinderella story that is. I mean, you know, 2 years later, getting, you know, album of the year is just fantastic, you know?
Yeah. Cause that record is so fucking dope.
It's amazing. I'm such a fan. I've got to work with those guys a lot, and I'm just first and foremost, just a fan, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they're just like, and I love that, like, it seemed like it was going to go by the wayside or something like that for a second, you know, like they maybe, cause you know, Julian's at the Boyds and guitar player has his own band and Albert. So it's just like, I was like any fan, I was just like, I wonder what's going to happen, man. You know? And then I'm so glad. Cause I just think that band is one of my favorite bands of all time.
It's hard to keep the momentum going, not even from the public's point of view, but from the artist's point of view. You know, I put out a photography book Christmas before COVID, and it's just like, we didn't really get it. We had a few book parties here and there, but you know, we didn't really get a chance to do a lot of stuff. And I was like, by the time we were able to have public events, like I was tired of it, you know, like I wasn't like excited anymore. I was 2 years old, you know?
Yeah. Right. I don't know. Well, that's the thing that's cool is like, so I had this record and like now I feel like I'm so fucking pumped to like play this record next year. Like I'm so ready, you know, and like, and the new songs feel so good, but I haven't played them all yet. I played the ones that have been out. So like, you know, it's been like 4 to 6 songs, and then, and now I'm going to play the whole record, which will be super fun.
Oh, that must be so exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So we had Wyatt Cenac on the podcast not too long ago, and he's a really talented comedian, but he's also a comedy writer.
Yeah.
And we talked about the different experiences of writing a joke for somebody else that gets a big laugh as opposed to getting to be the one actually on stage saying the joke, you know, when it lands and when it kills. Are there any parallels with your process? I mean, what's the biggest joy for you? I mean, is there a difference between writing a song that becomes a big hit that someone else performs, or is the ultimate goal really to be basically right where you are right now with an album that you get to play yourself?
I mean, both is amazing. Like if I could choose and have both, which I do, I would choose that, just because it's like, what a thrill. I mean, you know, that's a big deal for someone to like sing your song. I mean, you know, especially like a big freaking artist, you know, like just like, you know how many songs that they can choose from? Like anybody, you know? So it's a big honor. So I love that part of it. And, you know, so I love them both. But, you know, as a singer, I feel like also from like some of my songs, I mean, and I don't mean this like in level of difficulty, but maybe a little bit of that sometimes, but it's like, I feel like not a lot of people can sing my songs, you know, and bring them home, because like, it's like, first of all, they're so mean, they're so my vibe, you know, that I just like kind of know, you know, when it's really me, like, you know, like I can't picture anybody singing like Tokyo Sunrise or, you know, it's like something like, or I don't know, like, I can't think of one from this record, but yeah, I just feel like they're very me, you know, like I know, like in their essence. And I don't mean that other people would see that, you know, but I feel like they are when it's
written in your voice.
Yeah. When it resonates with me that hard, I can't see anybody else singing it. So I'm like, all right, I'll have to do it myself.
So it is, it's wholly gratifying even to have someone else have a hit song that you wrote. There isn't, there's not just a tang of like, oh man, I wish that was me on stage. I wish that was my hit song.
No, never. In fact, I only have one that's the reverse. I wish I didn't do this one song because I gave it to Shakira, and then my label made me keep it and sing it myself. I think in my hands, it was like kind of sweet and cute, but I think in Shakira's hands, like basically anything, like she could have like you know, a rolled up newspaper in the hands, and it would be sexy. You know what I mean? Like,
and it'd be an anthem.
You know? Yeah. And so I just like, was very like, I didn't want that song back. So it's the reverse. Yeah. I was like, I wish someone else had sung that damn song.
I mean, you've gotten to write and work with so many like fantastic artists, and you know, I don't want to put you on the spot. You don't have to name names, but I would suspect there's some rather outsized egos that go along with those collaborations as well. Do you have any great stories of people that were like particularly difficult or a situation you had to really navigate like during the recording process?
No. And to be honest with, like, most of the time it's like it's written and then they get it. Like, it's like I write it with like, you know, they're not in the room 95% of the time. But you know, like I once had like, this is not being difficult at all, but like a song I wrote for Cher, like, I guess she sent an email that like they forwarded to me that like, could I rewrite the second verse for some reason she didn't like something in the second verse. I was like, sure, of course, Cher. No problem. But then when I heard her, like, you know, when it came out, she had used the original second verse, and I was like, cool. I'll never get those 5 minutes back that I spent writing that second verse again. But yeah, but yeah, no, I don't have any.
Would it have been a different response potentially with a different artist? Does she?
No, I would always rewrite anything for anybody. Cause you know, such personal shit, you know?
Yeah. Well, I want to switch gears for a second. Have you had a chance to watch Peter Jackson's Get Back, the Beatles documentary?
No, not yet, man. I'm just like, I heard so many great, great things. What'd you think?
I have to say, I guess my response would be to people who haven't seen it yet. Anything that you've heard, either good or bad, is probably true, depending on your perspective. You know, like any sort of criticism of it being, you know, if you're not a Beatles fan, the criticism of it being too long or bloated or slow is probably valid.
I mean, listen, if you're not a Beatles fan, don't fucking watch it, man. I don't want to hear, like, what are you doing? It's like, wow, it smells terrible in here. Then get the fuck out. I mean, wait, it's like, ew, this milk is terrible. Let's try this. Like, no. So.
Yeah. For somebody like me, the Beatles mean so much. It is nothing short of a magical experience getting to watch that creative process.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike Del Rio, my producer and, you know, my boy, he's watched it twice already. It's like 16 hours. Yeah. I was like, well, but you know, it's like, that's like, you know, it's interesting. I think like a lot of people, it was kind of like they would go like their opinion of Yoko Ono after watching it. That was like three different people. Like, I liked her after watching that. And some people like, I hated her after watching that, you know, like, and I mean, she's such a, interesting, polarizing figure always. I just never, you know, I'm always like kind of just absolutely like amazed at like how much, you know, there is to say about Yoko Ono for people like that. And, you know, I mean, when I watched the John Lennon documentary, I guess, Imagine, whatever, the ire that she raised in people like back in the day, you know, and just like, I was like, wow. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. Like the couple of people that, you know, that I talked to about it, they had that to say.
Yeah. I wasn't a huge fan of hers, but I was just kind of ambivalent. Didn't necessarily have an opinion. I didn't think she solely broke up the Beatles, but I think it's kind of vindicating for her, if anything. Like, it's,
that's cool.
It's pretty interesting. But I you know, like you brought up Albert from the Strokes, and you know, I've worked with those guys a lot, and we had Albert on the show last season. And after watching just the first episode of that movie, I couldn't help but thinking of those guys, you know. And it's just, you know, for anybody who's ever been involved in a group creative process, especially for musicians, I think it's just like, it resonates and has such insight into band dynamics and what it means to have a group creative process. And it's really, really interesting.
It's funny because I'm a collaborator, but as a solo artist, and it's much different, you know what I mean? Because I make the ultimate cut, or like, I'm not gonna do this, you know. And even like, you know, I've gone places like with songs where I've been like, hey, listen, on that last record, you made me change this chord or something for a song that like existed previously. You made me change this chord on that to like a minor instead of a major. I'm never doing that again. Unless I totally agree with it, you know, because I feel like even though that song still did well, I think it as it was what drove me to put it on this record. And now, you know, but like shit like that, I don't have to, you know, I don't really have to argue about that. I'm just like, it's my way, you know, like ultimately, even though I love, I love the collaboration process, and I'm very open, you know, and I don't micromanage. I try to, like, you know, let everybody flow.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really fascinating document of people having to work together.
Yeah, I bet.
And, you know, and I reached out to Albert. I was like, you know, did this kind of resonate? And he's like, you have no idea how close to home some of these scenes felt, you know, like they're really, I think anybody in a band can really appreciate it just on that level, if not for the music, you know?
I mean, you know, did you ever watch that Eagles documentary?
Yeah.
Like, remember that guy that got kind of like kicked out of the band who was like big tough guy? He was one of the guitar players.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know his name, you know, when he was like, crying and stuff like that. I just think about like bands, you know, like you got these like titans of music that are like the kings of like everything, you know what I mean? And like, you know, multiple wives, like, you know, like lady killing for years, you know, like, and just like master of the universe. And then they're in a band and they're like, I feel like they're almost like crying and more fragile about their bandmates than like if their wife left them. You know what I mean? There's just these grown men crumble like because of these relationships in bands, you know, and you know, with jealousy and rage, and like, you know, it's like it's almost like you're like, wow, didn't you guys date during that whole period? You know, because you can't believe how you know, the emotion that it brings up.
It must be like an incredibly intimate experience in some ways, more so than being married. You're married to four other people.
Oh my God. My first songwriting partner, who's like my first band, I don't ever want to like see them again. Like, I don't, like, you know, we went through everything. We did
you
all,
got your
we did
fill.
Everything yeah. you could do. Yeah. We were like, you know, romantically involved, every single fucking thing. And, you know, if I never see them again, it would be too soon.
So, I mean, getting, you know, back to get back for one moment, because I can talk about that movie for hours because I was so floored by it. But my true love and my passion with respect to photos has always been taking documentary and reportage photos. You know, I've been so fortunate to get to travel with, I went on tour with The Strokes and with Outkast. And I was personal photographer to Sean Combs for many years. And then last year I put out a photography book documenting 10 years of surf culture on the North Shore of Hawaii.
Oh, wow.
And the point is, there's a through line with all those subjects, and that is they're really compelling, interesting people that inspire me.
Yeah.
And, you know, my mission statement has always been, hey, I know it might be difficult or even obtrusive to have someone documenting you all the time, but if a photographer, me or anyone else, puts in the passion and the vision and the care that it deserves, that archive someday is going to be precious and feel like a gift, you know? And then I feel like Get Back really proves the power and the importance of documenting creative people in that process. And I guess that leads me to the question, like, how well have you documented your process over the years? Do you have an archive?
Ooh, that's a good question, because, like, I mean, I do in some regard. Yeah. We've, like, you know, but not like that, you know, I mean, I Mike is like, kind of talked to me about that. We've talked about it. I mean, that's another whole conversation, but I should look into that more, you know?
With the passage of time, that material just becomes so much more important.
Yeah. Like, I bet like it's unbelievable that they have that, you know, I heard, again, I have to see it, but like, I heard there's like a, did Paul and John, like, they were having a conversation and they didn't know that they were being recorded or something during it.
Yeah. So they actually left to have a really kind of intense, discreet conversation. And the director had somehow planted a microphone in a flower pot. So they recorded the whole thing. And it was just fascinating to see the dynamic between these two people and how they argued and how they viewed each other and how they viewed George. Oof. It was really incredible. Like,
yeah, that must have been insane. Like,
Yeah. So I have to say, in full disclosure, to be totally honest, I wasn't that familiar with a ton of your work until relatively recently. And I've been doing my research and I did a deep dive and I listened to a lot of your work and you know, I was floored, you know, not just at your talent and the scope of what you've been able to accomplish, but I was also really surprised at the size of your social media following. And, you know, that these days that's a thing, you know, that's a commodity. And it made me think that, you know, with such a strange era that we're living in, there was a time not that long ago that if, you know, 1.2 or 1.5 million people were fans of something and they knew about something, like, I would basically know about it too. You know, not necessarily because I had my ear to the street that much more, but there wasn't as many avenues for people to find out about things. You know, the point is that, you know, because of social media, you have people that are now able to find each other and to form communities and, you know, like-minded people.
I mean, it's kind of super fun for someone to come along of it, like you though. It's fun to like have that, you know? Oh my God.
Yeah.
I mean, I have so many fan clubs. I can't believe it. Like, I don't even know how many. There's so, like, it blows my freaking mind, you know. And I try to follow them. I'm like that, you know. I'm just like kind of, it's a little weird because then I go on Instagram and it's just like my world all the time. But I don't know. I feel like it's a, you know, it's something I like to do for people. But I love people coming on into the, and discovering me and going like, wait, what? Like, even like, you know, barring the social media part, I think that, you know, there's a lot of, I have a lot of material, you know. It's like, there's like a lot of shit to like, you know, if you're just running into me now and like discovering me, like, I mean, I think it's, and if you like it, there's going to be a lot of shit to like unpack.
But I mean, it must be fascinating as an artist because, I mean, you already had a career up and running when social media was really first starting to take off, but it provides a platform for a lot of creative people who otherwise might have fallen through the cracks of like traditional gatekeepers.
Oh, God,
you know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it also gives voice to a dark side because of that same power you have, you know, whether it's QAnon or flat earthers or like anti-vax and conspiracy theories, you know, there's a dark side too. So, I mean, I guess my question in all this is what's your connection with social media? What's your relationship? I mean, have you ever had any missteps or unintended consequences because of your ability to speak to so many people instantly?
I try, you know, to keep it light, you know, I'll be honest with you, you know, one of the biggest things I got, you know, I had a breakup and, you know, it was a very public relationship. So that was actually my first real public relationship. And, you know, a year after we were together, my shit blew up, you know? And so we became known, you know, as a couple and, you know, I didn't make an announcement about it, like that we broke up and, you know, it was like a year ago, actually yesterday. And it's like, I didn't. Because it just like, to me, it's like, that's my business. You know what I mean? And like the fact that like when I saw people take sides, you know, on social media, I was just like, oh, wow, I didn't like intend for that to happen. You know, it's like, I would never dream of like intruding on someone's that I was a fan of their relationship. Yeah. You know what I mean? And judging and being like, how you did. I mean, you know, and first of all, you know, like all kinds of things, you get this thing in you where you're like, you know, because I think my career, like I, you know, a lot of people came upon me and I had a song about like someone breaking up with me. So it's like, you know, and I've never felt like a victim in my life. I don't have a victim mentality. You know, even like my ex will think like, will even say that. I'm like, no, it's like, whatever, you know? But I think that it's, you know, I'm also not running for a person of the year. Yeah. I don't give a fuck, you know, I have my own opinions and things, you know, and barring outside being, you know, hurting a group of people, you know, or like, you know, being judgmental or being, you know, prejudiced in some way towards someone, like, you know, that's awful and unforgivable, you know, but it's like, but you know, just to be my own person, have my own life, my own private life. It's like, it's interesting, you know, it's like, I was like kind of floored by all that. And, you know, and that's on, like, that's the very little bit of negative I've like experienced. But on the other side, like you were saying, I've got all these people that have become friends through being a fan of mine, and like have like, you know, discovered all kinds of things, and like, and because the visual representation is there, you know, like, you know, I have a lot of personality, so you know, so it goes another thing too, and I'm pretty open about it. Like, you know, I let, like, you know, I think my fans, if they care, they can find out who I am as a person. I like that about social media, you know, and I don't, you know, I hope I haven't had a misstep, you know, I like, cause I also care. I'm trying not to, I don't, you know, I'm like not trying to, hurt anybody, you know, ever, you know, and, I know people who have, you know, canceled themselves think that way too, you know, but truly, I mean, I try to keep it like more about, you know, the music and about the love of the fans, and not be like, kind of use it as a platform to tell people that I think the earth is flat. Yeah. I do. It is.
But I mean, it must be such a fine line to have to walk when you want to have your personal privacy for at least a portion of your public life. And I mean, your personal life with your relationships,
yeah.
But you're also, you're incredibly out there, and there's a million and a half people that are kind of feeling like they know you intimately because of what you put online.
Yeah. And they think that they know what happened in your relationship. It's hysterically funny. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm sorry, what? Like, you know, where were you when this was happening? Oh, you lived here with us. Yeah. Yes. You know what happened. Yeah.
Sure. Cool. Well, we always like to ask our guests at the end of the show to plug a project that they're not involved with that they feel hasn't been getting enough attention lately, whether it's like a book or a movie or another artist. Do you have any artists that you're working with that you want to shout out that that maybe not aren't getting enough attention?
You know, I mean, not that don't have their own thing, you know, I'm working with my friend Barnes Courtney. He's got his own record already out. My friend's Palais Royale, you know, that's we've been hanging out a lot. But what else we got? My friends have this, one of the guys I wrote one of my songs with other people, this guy Ben Romans and CJ Barron, they have this amazing show called Cages, which is their group is called Wolf and Wonder Show. And they have this show called Cages, which is playing downtown LA. It's every Friday and Saturday night. And it's like a state-of-the-art, like kind of new 3D theater experience where they play this whole body of work that they have, and there's live actors and all this like stuff going on like on 3D screens. It's really, really fun and cool. And you know, then that's you know, that's just under the umbrella of what the people I work with.
Amazing. All right, well, check out Churches first and foremost, and Cages Friday and Saturday nights. And LP, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down. I know you had a long day, but I super appreciate it. I hope we got to some interesting topics.
Thank you, man. I really had a good time. I wasn't probably at my most interesting because I'm like, my brain is just like gone.
I think we got into it.
Cool. Thank you. What's the name of your book? Can I get one of your books?
It's called HI1K, 10 Years, 1,000 Moments on the North Shore. I'll get you a copy. I'd love you to check it out.
Love yeah.
It.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'll reach out.
All right.
Take care. Enjoy the rest of your day. Care.
Thank you so Cheers. Much.
Thanks for listening. And a huge thanks to today's guest for dropping in. If you enjoyed this episode, do us a favor and take a minute to rate, review, follow, or subscribe. This episode of The Plug was executive produced by Ryan Bucci and Peter Buckingham. Theme music by Andrew Van Weingarten and Dan Drohan, with sound design by Brad Worrell at Soundwag. Thanks again, and be sure to tune in for future conversations.
And don't forget to post your job for free at linkedin.com/surf. That's linkedin.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.